as to what is good. Love one another with brotherly affection. Outdo one another in showing honor. Never flag in zeal. Be aglow with the Spirit. Serve the Lord. Rejoice in your hope. Be patient in tribulation. Be constant in prayer. Contribute to the needs of the saints. Practice hospitality. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse them. Rejoice with those who rejoice. Weep with those who weep. Live in harmony with one another. Do not be haughty, but associate with the lowly. Never be conceited. Repay no evil for evil, but take thought for what is noble in the sight of all. If possible, so far as it depends upon you, live peaceably with all. Beloved, never avenge yourselves, but leave it to the wrath of God. For it is written, "Vengeance is mine, I will repay," says the Lord. No, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him drink. For by so doing, you will heap burning coals upon his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good.
I think so often when we hear the scripture read, sometimes within a space of a verse or two, the Bible seems to contradict itself. And so we hear the Master telling us, if your enemy is thirsty, give him drink. If he's hungry, feed him. If you do this, it's like pouring red hot coals over his head. Well, we have to see that the Bible was written, of course, a long time ago, and you have to look at the context and within the age it was written. You have to look at the Bible in a colloquial way. For instance, a colloquial saying, that is an everyday saying, might be, "I'm in a pickle." But 2,000 years from now, we wouldn't set out to find in some digging somewhere, archaeological digging, cucumbers large enough for people to crawl into, because it's a colloquial saying. In the East, in the eastern area that Jesus was living in and the way he thought, it was not the Occidental concept of life. And so we find Jesus was saying something that everyone at that time understood, that fire represented purification. And so he was saying a colloquial saying. He was saying, if you do feed your enemy, if you do help your enemy, it's going to be like pouring live coals on their head. In other words, it's going to cleanse their mind. It's going to change their mind. It's going to change the character of their thinking. He wasn't saying, you know, you're going to go out and really get them. It isn't like to say, now, be nice to your enemies, it'll drive them crazy. That's not true. And it didn't work then, and it doesn't work now. But he's trying to tell us, without any contradictions, if you do good unto those that are upset or fearful or have a weak image of themselves or frustrated for some reason, if you're kind, even if they're not, you'll find that it will help them change their mind. It will purify their thoughts. That's what he's saying. And I want you now to look at the morning meditation on the first page of our bulletin. It has to do with thankfulness. And sometimes to sensitize ourselves to our own tremendous capabilities, as well as to sensitize ourselves to the real motives of others, it's very good to cultivate an attitude of thankfulness. I make today a day of thankfulness. I find something to rejoice in. Let's say that together. I make today a day of thankfulness. I find something to rejoice in. And I'll tell you, the greatest state of mind that we can have is the ability to be thankful, and sometimes to rejoice that we've remembered to be thankful is a very wonderful feeling to be in. Let's say this again. I make today a day of thankfulness. I find something to rejoice in. Let's say it again. I make today a day of thankfulness. I find something to rejoice in. Now let's say it very softly together. I make today a day of thankfulness. I find something to rejoice in. And as I don't, you don't have to search out. You can turn within. Just the ability to be grateful is something to be grateful for. Now let's say it ever so softly to ourselves together. I make today a day of thankfulness. I find something to rejoice in. Now, if you will, close your eyes. And be still. And be thankful for your ability to be thankful. We give thanks that we are aware of life, our life. We are aware that we have the power to say yes or no to any thoughts, to any circumstances. We have the ability within us to feel loving in unloving circumstances. We have the ability to be loving in areas and environments that aren't loving. We have the ability to think new thoughts. We have the ability, and we've come to this hour so that we might see ourselves objectively as a part of the universe. We've come to find our individuality at the same time we've come to find our oneness with all life. We've come to recognize the spirit of intelligence that we call God flowing through the universe as the universe. We've come to realize in our secret inner beings of God, God alive as me. God flowing through me as me. We've come to see the majesty, the depth, the width, of what we truly are. We've come to be still and hear with faculties yet unnamed within us the voice of God. Heavenly Father, how grateful we are for all the circumstances of our life that have placed us in this moment. Bless us that we can hear objectively. Bless us with thankfulness and with new understanding and definitions of friendship as we live through this hour. Bless every member of this congregation, our friends and guests that have come to worship and study with us, and all people everywhere who lift up their minds and hearts to Thee by whatever name they call Thee. May we find our oneness with all. And this morning we pray for more peace, more love, more friendship. Amen. For the next few weeks on Sunday morning, you're going to have some wonderful guest speakers. You're going to have next Sunday the Reverend Blaine C. Mays, who is our Unity minister in Phoenix, Arizona, and has a very large congregation there, and he also happens to be the president this year of the International New Thought Alliance. Blaine and I roomed together when we were going to college, so I've known him more than a couple of days. And then after that, you're going to have the Reverend Stan Hampson, who was our Unity minister in Hawaii and built a large church there and has just resigned to work full-time for our national church and headquartered in Unity Village, Missouri. And Stan is going to be in charge of all placement in the Unity field, which is a tremendous work and a great responsibility for a young man. And I've known Stan since he was a teenager when I was working my way through seminary and working with the youth desk, and he came back to Unity Village to a youth conference many years ago. And since that time, he wanted to be a minister then when he was 15, 16, and he's turned out to be one of our best. So you're going to have some very fine speakers here the next few Sundays. You'll also have as your chairman Pauline Boygard. And she is studying at Unity. She will finish a year from now from the seminary work and will come and be our assistant minister here at Christ Church. So it's going to be wonderful to have her as the platform chairman. You'll get to see her. Many of you know her already. And that a year from now, we're going to have a woman minister, which will be a lot of fun for all of us to get used to. It'll be the first woman I've ever worked with as a minister. I asked for assistant, I got one, you know. Well, I'm overjoyed to have her, and she's a wonderful person, and I'm sure you'll learn to love her. I'm not going anywhere. I'm going home and plant flowers for a few weeks, take a few days away from the city, and plant a few flowers in my mind, which we all need to do once in a while. In my absence, you'll have Pauline Beauregard here in counseling. We have Dr. Parker, a full-time psychiatrist, on our staff, so I feel that there are plenty of people here who can help. Also, Reverend Arthur Hammonds, our unity minister in El Cajon, is in and out of the church here, and if you need his services, why, of course, he will take care of the religious things. Now, let's talk about friendship in the home. Yeah, last week I talked about friendship, because everyone needs more friends. And everyone wants more friends. We say of someone, you know, there's my friend. And we like to say that. We are continually trying to expand ourselves. We can do it so easily. We can expand our feet with a car. We can expand our voice with a telephone. We can expand ourselves so many ways. But the way we really expand ourselves is through friends. Because we can extend our consciousness. And there is a great deal of need within each one of us to give ourselves. And we do this through friendship. The happiest marriages are between friends, not lovers. Don Blanding, the late Don Blanding, who was a personal friend of mine, the vagabond poet, wrote a little poem once that said, we got along. Oh, let's see how it goes. I should write these things down. We got along so beautifully when you were just my friend. No, that isn't it. I need a vacation. I liked you so much better when you were just my friend. Or, we got along so beautifully when you were just my friend. We yearned and burned and cried and sighed and bickered without end. I'm not saying it right. I'm not going to have any friends by the time this comes. Well, anyway, he wrote a poem I used to know. And I'm going to learn it again someday. When I was a boy growing up, I was 6, 7 years old, I had a grandmother who was Welsh. She didn't speak English, and I knew Welsh, I suppose, until I was old enough to go to first grade. Then I had to learn English. And she told lots of stories. And these stories were a part of her tradition, a part of her upbringing. And whenever I think of friendship, so many of these stories had to do with the very basic ideas of friendship and getting along in the world. There are 4 points that I want to remind you of this morning. And the first one is, point number 1, let your imagination release your imprisoned possibilities. Let your imagination release your imprisoned possibilities. Because all of us know we are a lot more than we've ever been able to say. And all of us, when we're by ourselves, think of the beautiful, wonderful things we could have said, we could have done, we could have acted out. Well, a story that I remember from childhood is the story about the happy hypocrite. And the happy hypocrite was named Lord George Hell. He was the epitome of the unscrupulous villain of his day, which would be mid-Victorian. He looked like a villain. He had a long, thin, stovepipe black hat. His face was the villainous kind of face. He wore black all the time, surrounded by a huge cape which he threw around him and wore to cover up probably his terrible desires and his awful black heart. But one day as he was going about his villainous way, he spied a beautiful, beautiful saint of a girl. And her name was Miss Meir. He saw her and he fell in love with her at first sight. He went up to her and he offered himself. And she said, "Sir, you, I perceive, are a villain." And she said, "I'll have nothing to do with you." And he begged and pleaded. And she said, "Why, don't be silly. I couldn't marry you." She said, "The man I marry will be a saint. He'll look like a saint, not you." And poor Mr. Lord George Hell went off by himself. But then he conceived of a brilliant idea. And he went to the greatest mask maker in all the world and had a mask made that he could pull down over his ugly, horrible, villainous features and look like a saint. He changed his clothes, disguised his voice, and he went up to the girl, and the girl looked at him and she said, "Sir, you are a saint." Now, Lord George Hell said, "Yes, I am." And while he was with her, courting her, he remembered never to be selfish, but he was always unselfish. He was always kind and generous. He pretended and he said beautiful things to her. He was the epitome of a gentleman, and they were married. And one day after they had been married and they were walking down the street arm in arm in great happiness, an enemy of Lord George Hell saw him and perceived who it was, and in his great anger he lifted the mask off of this villainous man, and there, to the surprise of everyone, underneath that beautiful angelic mask was a beautiful angelic face, because Lord George Hell had taken on what he had been pretending. He had fulfilled what he was doing and saying and thinking, and thereby he had changed. Well, it's a story that's so simple, and yet each of us responds to this story, because we know sometimes the people we are with call out and call up and from within us beautiful things that are dormant within us. And first thing you know, we're pretending, but the next thing you know, we really are that which they are calling and drawing from around us and from within. And so we find that let your imagination release your imprisoned possibilities. When you can do this, you'll find it's wonderful to be you. I said one time not long ago in a series of lessons, and this I have taken from what I see in our society, that too many people are interested in images rather than goals. We're too interested in being a certain kind of person now rather than developing the goals that will develop us into the kind of person we really want to be. And so we dress certain ways, we cultivate certain ways of thinking, we even want to live in certain areas at any cost. And I would say if there's anything that the immature, and of course we're immature at many ages, the immature mind is more interested in imagery than it is in goals. The person who sets their goals and knows where they're going is a person that's fine now, but they will be fine and better later on because they have a goal. Number two, use your imagination to become a success in the art of getting along with the people at home. I told a story one time, because it was years ago when I was first voted to be on the board of trustees of Unity School, and there's a whole group of different board members now, but at that time, and I think it was all within me, I remember walking into the first board meeting, and through not much fault of mine, I was late. And as I walked in, everybody turned and looked, and I felt like, I think I'll leave right now rather than go through this.
But I found the next day as I went in, I hesitated, and I got myself in a very good mood, and I began to say how much all those people are full of love, and they really are, and how much I'm full of love, and everything's beautiful, and it's wonderful, and I wouldn't be there if I wasn't supposed to, and all of this. And I opened the door, and it was a completely different setting. Well, the man who was listening to that lesson that Sunday morning went home and improvised. And he came back with this story after a few months. He said, I heard your story, and he said, I took the principle of what you were saying, and every day when I walk home from work, he said, I used to just walk in, and he said, no one would pay any attention to me, and everybody was busy with their chores at that time of the late evening. And he said, I felt neglected. I became angry and hostile. He said, I was tired. He said, I just felt that they didn't care. But he said, now when I get home, I sit out on the front steps, and I work with myself. And I tell myself, those are the most beautiful, wonderful people in the world. I tell myself how much they need, how much they mean to me, and how much I need them, and I love them. Why, he said, when I go in, he said, I'm the most amorous, I'm the most beautiful, I'm the most loving person in the world. He said, I just knock them over like that, kissing them and hugging them. And he said, it's wonderful, Reverend Stevens, what's happened in my home. And he said, it's wonderful because of what happened to me. He said, I've had to work at this. I had to think up things that would change me. And he said, as I was able to do this, he said, everyone changed. Number three, let your imagination, or use your imagination to really look at the people and see what's in them. Sometimes we get so filled with our own problems, so filled with our own desires and wants in any family living, that we don't hear what others say in the family. We're too busy saying, but I'm sick, or I'm unhappy, or I don't like that. We don't hear what's really going on. So oftentimes men and women come to my office for marital counseling, and it's always interesting. There's my chair and there's two chairs here, and each one sits down and they won't look at the other one. They just look at me, and they say, what's wrong, you know, and I assume it's the fellow sitting beside them, what's wrong here and wrong there and wrong somewhere else. And sometimes, often after 10 or 15 minutes of talking, the spouse will look over and they'll say, you never said that before. I know what's going to happen. And the other one looks over and says, why, honey, I've been saying this for 15 years. Well, you see, it wasn't heard. It wasn't listened to. I often feel when you have a difficulty in your family, whether it be with a spouse or a child, if you'll take two chairs and face them each other exactly 18 inches apart, and both of you sit down and take hands and look at each other in the eye, you'll solve that problem. You'll solve it. You'll be able to look at each other. You'll be able to concentrate. You'll be able to see if the other's eyes wells up with tears. You'll be aware. You'll be aware, you know, not what they're saying, as much as you will the feeling. So oftentimes, you know, when someone hurts us whom we love, when someone hurts us, we want to hurt them back. And that's when we say all the things we don't mean. We don't mean them while we're saying them. What we're really doing, we're hurting them for hurting us. And what we're really saying in a nincompoopy way is, you hurt me so bad, don't you know how much I love you? That's why I hate you. That's pretty hard to interpret in the heat of battle. You know it now. But will you know it when you're hurt? Or when you've been hurt, or when you are being hurt. Very difficult to discern then what I've just said. So we have to think about this. That's why take the chairs, hold hands, look at that child, look at that wife, look at that husband. You'll find out you'll say what you feel, not what your intellect is trying to tell you. And at best, maybe you'll want to sit there for 5 minutes and not say anything. Maybe all of that which is churning and agitating within you will quiet down. Maybe you won't have anything to say when it's over. Maybe you'll get up, embrace, go on your way. There are methods to solve problems. And interestingly enough, they are so simple when we take the time to put them into operation. Use your imagination to meet people. And sometimes we can live with people a long time and never really meet them. We say, I love you, but what we really mean is, I need you. And need is a very fickle thing. I need you now, I don't need you later. But love is a spirit of oneness. It means you like to be at one with someone. Oh, I know that there are many, many facets to problems. I've known people who have lived together for many, many years, and then through some circumstance, trivial or great, they find out how much they really did need each other. And that's when marriage begins to have on a whole new meaning. I can think of many things. If I were going to talk about friendship in the home, I could say something about divorce. Nobody believes in divorce. And yet we find that there are times in life and our experiences when it is really best to say, we just don't belong together. It was a mistake to begin with, and there's no use compounding the mistake. Sometimes people say, but for the sake of the children, we shouldn't be divorced. Well, sometimes for the sake of the children, you should be divorced. I often have people coming here to be married, and they defensively say, oh, but Reverend Stevens, do you marry people that have been married before? I say, yes. Yeah. And the reason I do is because sometimes we have to go through a marriage to find out what we really want. Sometimes we have to go through a marriage to gain the maturity to be the kind of person somebody else wants. So there can be great constructiveness in every experience. There can be great learning in every experience. I remember when I thought to myself here, I put down, use your imagination to meet people. And of course it means friends and homes, but I remember when this congregation was starting out and I was knocking on doors and meeting people. I used to go up to the door and go, oh, they're not home, and leave. I used to start out early in the morning and say, I'm going to go around eight blocks. I'm not going to stop till I go around eight blocks. And I'd get about three blocks and I'd say, well, if I did eight blocks tomorrow and maybe five extra ones, I'll quit today. And what does that show? Jesus, you know, told a story about a sower went forth to sow seed. And some seed fell on the hard ground, and some seed fell, and the sun came out, and it fell on the rocky soil, and the roots didn't go very deep. And when it came up, the sun was on it, and it wilted and died. And some seed fell out, and the birds came and ate it all. And some seed fell on good ground and brought forth a great crop. When we have a problem in our lives, and we have good desires in our heart, the good desires are the seed. And the master said, you're going to sow this seed out, and it all won't come out. It all won't grow like you thought. That's why it's so easy to take some of these simplistic things I tell us in a general way and take them home, and if the first one doesn't work, you say, aha! Reverend Stevens doesn't know what he's talking about, number one. Number two, you didn't respond like he said you would. And number three, I quit. That doesn't work. You know, when the master told us the story of the sower who went forth to sow, he said, some seed will fall on hard ground. Well, that's like a footpath. When you sow a new idea or a new concept or something you think sounds pretty good, but you sow it in a place that you have created old habit patterns that are diametrically opposed to that new idea, it won't grow. You have to give things a chance. When I was a boy going to school, and all of us that are over 40 walk 500 miles to school in the snow, That's what all young people think when they hear that. You know, in the spring when the rains would come and the grass would begin to grow, there was a little path that we'd worn hard, and the grass wouldn't grow there. And so you'd walk through that. Well, that's the way many of us are. And then we take some beautiful idea or concept and we throw it down there and it doesn't grow, and we say, well, I guess it won't work. You have to be very careful when you begin to put new ideas and concepts, or your old habit patterns will keep them from growing. It's the same way with the birds who come to eat the good idea. You go home and you talk to your neighbor and you say, now this is what I'm going to try, and I think this is a wonderful idea. And your neighbor will say, it won't work. You see, your neighbor is a bird who's come to gobble up that seed and take it from you. That's why when you're doing something that's new, inventive, and positive in your life, don't tell anyone. Don't tell anyone. And if you do have to, tell someone who is spiritually aware and positive enough who will encourage you rather than come and eat that seed. It's the same way some of us come out of this sanctuary like apples out of a barrel. We dart out that door and we say, I'm on my way, I'm going. And we start out full force with everything within us. We're like the seed that falls on the ground that has rocks underneath. And it starts in and it starts to grow, but then the sun comes out. And because it isn't deep in its embeddedness in the earth, why, it wills. Some of us make great beginnings, but we don't go very far because we really haven't put our roots down. We really haven't put our faith and our courage in something to say, I believe this will work. And I'll take the first step and God will show me where to take the second step. But we just don't go deep enough. And of course, the parable says that some fell on good ground and it grew. So that's the part of the parable we need to remember. Number four is, use your imagination in to catch a vision, to build a vision of yourself, of what you were meant to be. I've always found there are certain movies, and I don't go to see too many movies. I used to like cowboy pictures until the Indians started winning every battle. And I don't go anymore. But it's interesting how we are. And I say that in fun because I think there should be equality. But I think once in a while the cowboys should win again like they used to. But it's wonderful to go to a movie or to read a book like The Rogue, like The Greatest Story Ever Told, like Acres of Diamonds. These are old movies, books. There are many modern ones. But it gives you something wonderful to think about it. Last month, when I was in Philadelphia, and I walked through the Independence Hall, and I thought about those men who wrote the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, when I thought about their debates, and the courage they had, and the feelings they had, and the hopelessness of the task so often in those days, I thought, what an inspiring thing. And there is something within us all that comes up when we are inspired. There's that within us that takes away our cynicism or our mental or emotional laziness, and it comes welling up within us. Well, we all can have this wonderful thing. I'm thinking of couples. Within the last year, a couple came to the office. I really didn't know what they wanted. They came up and they sat down, and one had a little envelope and the other had a bag, a brown paper bag. And they were having a lot of fun. They said, Reverend Stevens, they were transferring their membership from a church. They just moved into the area. And they said, we wanted to know you and we wanted to tell you how we work things. She said, now, you're going to get a little check from each one of us every month. And she named her husband. She said, he is a taxi cab driver. And she said, he puts his money in the bank. And she said, every month you'll get it, the church will get a check from him, from his tithe. But she said, I'm a practical nurse. And she said, I save my tithe. And she let it go like this, and it made a lot of noise. I save my tithe in this mason jar. And she said, I like to bring down the money that I put in there every week. And she said, here it is. They were having a wonderful time doing something together. They don't see each other because she works all different hours and so does he. But yet they're doing it together. And it is in that doing and working together, each one an individual, but each having fun doing it their own way, that they gain something. One of the first marriages I ever had was at the Rancho Santa Fe Polio Hospital in Los Angeles. And I hadn't seen the couple until the day arrived to marry them. But they had already gotten their license, and there were a few people in the hospital who knew them that were there. And Dan, the man's name, was in one of those rocking beds that rocks. And he had to be there so many hours a day, and then he was immediately put into an iron lung. His wife, I don't remember her name, but she could sit up in a chair, but she had some apparatus on that helped her breathe, and at night she had to sleep in one of these lungs that allows you to breathe without muscles in your chest. And so when I married them, and it took a long time because they wanted to repeat every word, and sometimes the words were very difficult and spaced out, but I finally married them, and they were able to put the rings on, he in this bed rocking like this. And then as their friends congratulated them and went off, they said, you know, Reverend Stevens, we're not going to be able to live a normal life, normal married life. We'll probably spend the rest of our lives in an institution like this. And that's all right. We found each other. And they said, probably the only physical contact we'll ever have is to be able to hold hands. Like this, they held hands. I've heard people say, I'm not getting very much out of my marriage. Well, I can't tell everyone that story. But I know a couple that are happy as canary birds, and all they can do is just hold hands. You see, how much more are you receiving? And maybe you're not happy or satisfied. Sometimes the greatest satisfaction comes not in the happiness we have, but in the potential of happiness that we have the ability to create. And that's why we're here this morning. Whether it's friendship in our home life, or friendship in our neighborhood, or friendship in the world. The thing that should inspire and make us all happy is the great potential that each one of us have to be happy. When I think of parents and children, the greatest gift that any father can ever give his children is to love their mother. That's one of those great hidden secrets. It's sometimes the last thing a father thinks of when he thinks about support and working hard for them and teaching them this and that and the other. The greatest thing that any father, the greatest gift that any father can give his children is to love their mother. And the greatest gift that any mother can give her children is to love the children's father. And we need to remember this. It's one of the last things we think about, and it's one of those hidden things that can escape us a lifetime. All of these simple things I've told you, you can do. And more things than these can you do to bring more friendship, more of yourself into your home. Now let us be still and give thanks that we can hear and we can do. We can understand and we can practice. Not because of someone else, but because of the Spirit within each of us. Amen.